Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Now it's time for our Friday gathering, and this week I'm joined by Fianna Fáil TD for Cork South Central and spokesperson on housing Seamus McGrath, Sinn Féin TD for Louth and spokesperson on media communications and sport Joanna Byrne, editor of the journal.ie Sinead O'Carroll, and Ireland editor with the Irish Independent Fionnán Sheehan, and you're all very welcome. Now let's start with the Justice Minister Jim O'Callaghan, who was with us here in the studio on Wednesday, almost a decade on from the first Catherine Day report, which you might remember recommended purpose-built accommodation centres for migrants. And Jim O'Callaghan told us that he favours purchasing existing buildings, and he didn't go into any detail as to where those buildings would be or whether they've been identified yet. Seamus, is that an admission from government that it's just too politically challenging now to name a site, go through the construction and planning process, leaving a site like that as a potential target?
Well, I think I listened to the minister's interview, and he outlined that we're spending 1.2 billion this year in relation to the international protection seekers system. I think it's important that the government does try to get value for money in that. I think it makes sense that we would acquire buildings to house our international protection seekers while their applications are being processed. In terms of the locations, obviously the government will have to go through a clear strategy in terms of in communicating with communities and so on like that. Mm-hmm. I think over recent years we saw the system wasn't working the way it should. There was an urgency, there was a short-termism involved. Whereas now I think it's important, if we are to acquire units, we will be able to put services in place, we will be able to invest in those areas, and we will be able to communicate.
But Seamus, what's the logic in your mind that sees the government pursuing this policy of buying properties rather than building them?
Well, I think buying, obviously you get a building faster, and there is still an urgency in the system to provide accommodation. We still have high numbers, albeit they are coming down and they are going in the right direction. And this minister is determined to speed up the process of applications. They are taking far too long, people waiting for applications for several years, under appeal and so on. So the idea that we can buy properties, put in place a state centre, is an important approach. And, you know, building, going through planning, going through all of that will take years. This is about getting value for money. It's also about streamlining the system. And we are determined to work with communities. This isn't an approach to try and avoid that. It's critical that we do that. And I think this approach allows us to do that better than we have been doing in recent years.
Okay. Well, let's hear from Joanna Byrne from Sinn Féin, who's with us as well. Joanna, Sinn Féin has said new IPAS centres would only be put in more affluent areas which have the capacity and services to support them. That's your own party policy. The government still won't tell us, though, where these centres are going to be located. Do you understand why?
Yeah, look, you know, I don't think Sinn Féin has set out that these can only go in affluent areas as such. I think
that's what your policy
clear.
Says. New IPAS centres would only be put in more affluent areas which have the capacity and services to support them.
Yeah,
that's from your own party policy.
I think the key point of this, Claire, is that they have the capacity and the services to support them. I don't know anyone who would argue that it's right to locate asylum accommodation in communities which are already experiencing problems with lack of services, including GPs, disability services, education settings, access to public transport and areas of deprivation. And I think the only criteria in determining where accommodation for international protection should go by government is areas where private interests seeking to profit from an already dysfunctional system have properties which are often, and in most cases, let's be very clear, unsuitable accommodation turned into IPAS accommodation. So we have been very clear. We would be calling for us to move to the provision of state-run accommodation, of course, but we're also very clear that what should inform the decisions of where this accommodation is located is that they are placed in areas which are best resourced to accommodate them. And that doesn't mean in areas that are already struggling in terms of resources.
Do you agree with that, Seamus?
Broadly, yes. It's important that they are located in areas that have the capacity to take on additional people, and services are provided, and that there is investment and there is a partnership approach with communities insofar as possible.
Only in more affluent areas?
I don't agree with that. No, absolutely. This isn't the case of affluent areas versus non-affluent areas. It's about the capacity within the system, and we have to move away from the approach we had taking hotels in areas that, you know, there are no longer hotels available for tourists, for visitors and so on, that's not appropriate. And I think the idea of buying properties allows us to plan properly how we approach this. So it isn't about affluent or non-affluent. It's about areas that can be identified where suitable buildings become available and where the required investment can be there and where we can get a community approach as well to it.
Fionnán, when do you think we'll get the list of locations where these properties are going to be bought and sought by the government?
The day after they're bought would be the answer to that one. Clearly, this minister has got a firm view on this one, because he's been hinting at this now since he took up the job, that he wasn't in favour of this plan of building up to six super centres. You know, he's opposed to that. Obviously, time, logistics, and so on. If you're going through that planning process, you're just going to get bogged down for ages. There is strong merit in what Sinn Féin are saying around having the appropriate services in place. We have seen cases over recent years of accommodation that wasn't resembling accommodation being signed up for contracts. We had a case raised on the floor of the Dáil with the Taoiseach last week of a location where the ownership is unclear. It's tied up in the High Court. The local county council is actually looking at the building in terms of other breaches of planning going on there, and yet a multi-year contract has been signed there. At the same time, a hotel in the heart of Dublin 4 was intended to become an asylum seeker centre, and miraculously, following local objections, it was dropped a couple of weeks before this minister took over responsibility for that area. So it appears that no matter where you go in the country, you are going to hit problems here. No party is willing to say this is the exact location I'm talking about, because I get what Joanna is saying about the appropriate services and the demographics of the area, and that's very valid. But when Sinn Féin launched this policy, they weren't naming anywhere either. That they were saying this is exactly the type of location that we were talking about. So it's going to continue to be a political hot potato.
Mm-hmm. Sinead?
Yeah, because we've reframed this conversation over the last 2 years, mostly because the numbers have increased and there's a pragmatism and a practicality that has to come with that. You're talking, you know, when you mentioned Catherine Day's expert advisory group, you were talking about 3,500 a year. Now it's about 3,000 in the first quarter of this year. So there has to be a pragmatism. But what we shouldn't have lost from the Catherine Day report and everything that happened at that stage of this process was the principles of it were meant to be humane and about the dignity of the people who were coming to seek asylum. And we have barely mentioned that here in this conversation. Jim O'Callaghan didn't mention it in his conversation with you earlier in the week. And I think if you start there, it's easier to bring communities along, because you're talking about people, not numbers. And you're not talking about the people who shouldn't be here. You're talking about the people who should be here. So, you know, Jim O'Callaghan talked about the 70% of people who don't get the application approved. That doesn't mean that they're, you know, trying to scam the state. That means that what they felt was asylum seeking is not approved at our end. But the 30% who are approved to be here and to become part of our country here, that's who we should be focusing on. And I think if you focus on that, it's easier to bring communities along rather than talking about who is coming and who stays illegally.
Yeah, what, Seamus, do you think in general, the change that we have seen in the government policy when it comes to asylum seekers since Jim O'Callaghan went in there? I mean, are we going to deport our way out of this problem? Because there's a huge financial burden here as well. I mean, so it's costing over 2 million a day to house people who are applying for asylum in Ireland.
Yeah, we have 33,000 individuals in accommodation at present. 9,000 of those are children, as Sinead pointed out. It is important to remember the humane side of this. No, we're not going to deport our way out of this, but deportations have to be part of the approach here. I mean, not everybody coming here is a legitimate asylum seeker. Some are, of course, and as the Minister made clear, they will be provided with accommodation. But those who aren't, their applications need to be processed in an efficient manner. And if they are deemed not to be legitimate asylum seekers, well, then they need to be removed from the state. And if that can be done on a voluntary basis, well and good. If it has to be done through a deportation, an enforced deportation, that has to be part
of
it. And
Ireland isn't. Like, we established this with Jim O'Callaghan the other day. It can only be done when they're going back to a country that has agreed to accept them. And it doesn't seem to me from my conversation with him that there are agreements with very many other countries, if any, apart from Georgia, to take people back. So that means that the deportations that we've seen, they're largely symbolic, aren't they?
So there does have to be agreement, and the minister did say that. He also said it wasn't something he was overly concerned about. He said there is cooperation coming from other countries as well. We hadn't seen deportations up to recently, so this is a new approach by government. I welcome it because it is important that those who aren't legitimate asylum seekers are removed from the state. I mean, that is what.
And you're happy that even if all it does is send out a message, are you comfortable and happy that is enough and that is the purpose of those flights?
But it isn't just about sending a message. It is about the system working correctly. I mean, we can't have a system in place here where those coming here all end up remaining here. That is never going to work. Those who are legitimate will be allowed to stay here. Those who aren't, there will have to be a system in place to remove them. You're right about the fact that it has to be through agreement with the country of origin. But the minister did say there's a lot of work taking place to seek those agreements so that there will be further deportations. And he made it also clear that there will be further mm-hmm. flights in the coming months. And I think that is fair.
There's also going to be growing numbers if you look at what's happening around the world. And like even when you're talking about the humane situation, if you look at what Israel have said they want to happen in Gaza, they want to move Gazans to the southern area where they will then leave to go to third countries. So forced displacement, their neighbouring countries have said, we can't take part in this. So it's going to be a European issue that they're going to have to figure out. There's already 5.9 million Palestinians in those neighbouring five countries. So there's a practical reason why we should be talking. Europe should be a lot more forceful with Israel if you want to mm-hmm. try and like force the conversation that way. But it's also a conversation that we should be having in how we talk about people who need to come to other countries or are made to come to other countries in the case of.
And Joanna Byrne, what's your position on deportations?
Yeah, you know, I was very struck to hear Sinead bring the humane aspect into it, because in every conversation and behind every statistic and every debate we have are humans and relived experiences. And I don't believe anything should be done, as you referenced to Seamus there, in regards to just sending a message, because the message is not the key point here. It's how we fulfil our obligations and ensure that people, whether it's people in existing communities, whether it's new arrivals coming into asylum accommodation in communities, or whether it's people facing deportation, that they're treated with dignity, they're treated with respect, they're treated with fairness, and they're also treated in a timely manner. And that's probably the reason that there's such pressure to find locations on new I-class accommodations.
But just to be clear, you don't object to deportations and the recent deportations we have seen, in particular to Georgia?
I think if people are eligible to be here, they should be here. And if people are not eligible to be here, they should not. But they should be processed in a timely manner either way. And I think that's the key to this.
OK. And what about further deportation flights? Would you be supportive of the state spending more to deport people from this country and not rely on voluntary deportations?
Well, again, it comes to their eligibility to be in the country. If they're eligible to be in the country, we need to have the processes and procedures in place to process these things in a timely manner. If they're not eligible to be here, they're not eligible to be here, and deportations will have to happen. And it's about fixing the dysfunctions in the whole system as to what's the most efficient and cautious and prudent way to ensure that these deportations happen, necessary deportations, in a timely manner.
Okay, I want to move on now and talk about the housing czar position, because we're a week on, Fiona, aren't we, from the debacle that we had over this. We're talking about it last week on the programme. But are we any closer to knowing who the housing czar will be? Will we have one? What will they be paid? Where is the story?
No, not quite. We're still in kind of fallout phase from the removal of Brendan McDonagh, the head of NAMA, from this process.
And he removed himself.
We'll put it that way. So you are now back into the debate about the purpose for this job, and politics is about persuasion. This minister got a bit too far ahead of himself,
James Brown,
in terms of putting a name out there, when he didn't really seem to understand you need to bring several different people along with you, the public, number one, your government partners being the others. And I firmly believe there is a compelling argument for this role being created. I think I look at places right across the country. Joanna will understand, above in Drogheda, you're not too far away from the Meath border. It issues kind of rise that will cut across jurisdictional boundaries where you need to bring different agencies together. Same with Seamus down in Carrigaline, where people will be affected by both this, what the City Council, the County Council does, the NRA and so on. So the notion of having somebody to bring together different agencies and prioritise specific aspects of housing policy makes an awful lot of sense.
Is the job not toxic though now, Fiona?
Yeah, that's the problem. This minister has not explained adequately what's the purpose of it in the first place. He then went ahead and put a name out there without having agreement on it. It's now become something of a poison chalice. There's far more scrutiny into it. During COVID-19, the phrase used to be, you know, perfect was the enemy of the good. And that's the problem now. Everybody's saying, well, you know, what statutory powers are behind this? What exactly will the salary be? What exactly will the staff be? Rather than setting up an office that is needed to break down the barriers that are there in place. It shouldn't be needed. It shouldn't be. There should be directives issued from the Custom House and they should go down and trickle down through the system and everybody should be pulling in the one direction. It just doesn't happen. And I think anybody can see that who's working on any level. So a job like this does make sense, but you also have to make sure that you get it across the line. And, mm-hmm. and that seems to be the intrinsic difficulty right here.
So Seamus, your colleague made a mess of it, is what Fionnán is saying.
Absolutely not. And look, I want to agree with Fionnán. This is an office that's needed. It isn't about an individual. And I think there's too much focus on...
James Brown made it about an individual.
Well, to be fair to the minister, Brendan McDonagh's name was well and truly in the public domain at that stage. But this isn't about an individual. It's about an office that's being established within the Department of Housing. It is an operational office. It's going to be tasked with a day-to-day function of trying to unlock some of the blockages in the system. And again, Fionnán is correct. There are blockages in the system. There are so many different stakeholders, I suppose, in terms of trying to get large-scale developments underway. You have local authorities, you have utility companies, you have the likes of TII, NTA and so on. They all have a role to play. Unfortunately, we have seen too many silos in the system whereby, you know, one particular agency looks after what it has to do, but nobody is necessarily pulling the bigger picture in terms
of
activating.
You've really experienced people, well-paid people, in all of those departments working away, you would imagine, with the aim of fixing the housing crisis. And then you have the minister who's supposed to be overseeing them and bringing them together. And yet we have an admission that the minister can't get the job done and needs somebody else in there.
Well, the minister has a very broad role, to be fair. And his role is about setting housing policy, being answerable in the Dáil and so on. What the Housing Activation Office and the person who heads that up ultimately will be someone who can get stuck in on a day-to-day basis. They will have a sole focus on trying to activate large-scale developments. And I think that sole focus is critically important. We need to ensure that the blockages that are there are unlocked. And that's what this office will do. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, you have developments out there where there is a planning permission in place, where there is a developer ready to go, but for some reason they're not progressing because there might be an issue to do with a connection to utilities, there might be an issue to do with a transportation issue that needs to be resolved. So these are the kind of issues that this office will put a focus and a spotlight
right,
on.
Joanna,
and that's important.
Joanna, you don't think that we need this person at all or this office at all, do you?
Look, I think the government's approach to this in recent weeks has been nothing short of a calamity. And when you strip it back to the bare bones of this and what the public are hearing is that there was the proposed appointment of an individual on a huge, astronomical, astonishing salary of €430,000 of taxpayers' money, being appointed by the housing minister to do effectively what the housing minister is tasked with doing. So in essence, you have a very large top up on the housing minister's salary in one way of looking at it to bring on somebody on board to job share with them. Or you have got the government blatantly saying in no uncertain terms that they have no confidence in the minister to do his own job. And no, we don't agree. Sinn Féin don't agree. And I think we've been very vocal on that over recent weeks that you know, government need to be following the recommendations of the Housing Commission. And what the Housing Commission proposed was a coordinating mechanism. And I agree with Seamus to some extent.
But is that not what this is?
Needed. But this is not. This is a new agency, not a mechanism. And it's a new agency that is set up with no powers, with no legislation, and it wouldn't be underpinned by legislation with emergency powers that a coordinate mechanism would, as proposed by the Housing Commission.
Okay.
So essentially, it's jobs for the boys here again, and more waste by this government.
It isn't a job for anybody at the moment.
Recalling Owen Murphy's book tour last year and how he was saying like he couldn't get departments to work together, like his own people were briefing against him in the end, and it feels like we still have that level of dysfunction. So if, you know, once someone's salary becomes the story, you're absolutely at a loss. But if there's value for money in that salary, and if it is about just knocking heads together with like a big boss salary that, you know, you can knock doors down, there are examples of some of that stuff happening around the country. We saw the housing agency talk about Limerick and how they've been able to get so many CPOs done on derelict houses because they put a team in place. They, you know, got that team to stay together, which probably meant decent remuneration for them. And now they've got a CPO process down to 4 weeks. But they should be telling every other county and city council how to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So these are the kind of things that somebody like this could put in place. And if it's 430,000, if it's 230,000, if it's 130,000, if it constitutes value for money, I think most people who are looking for a house or looking for a rental would be pretty happy with that.
Seamus?
Yeah, look, just in response to the Sinn Féin position, the last thing we need here is another agency. That's the last thing. And this is not another agency. This is a unit which will be set up within the Department of Housing, a relatively small unit, which will have a sole focus of trying to progress large-scale developments. So this isn't a state agency. And the Housing Commission did make reference to a coordinating approach like that. The Minister got to go ahead from the Housing Subcommittee, the Cabinet Subcommittee, in February to progress with this. And government is absolutely determined to progress with it because it is about delivering houses. And we all know the ultimate solution to the housing problem is increasing housing supply. We can talk about other schemes that are there to help buyers and so on like that. But ultimately, unless we increase the overall number of houses, we're not going to resolve the problem.
Mm-hmm. Another issue government grappling with this week, how to police protest, and in particular, Fiona, on protesters who cover their faces. And Jim O'Callaghan brought this legislation to Cabinet today, whereby if a Garda believes that somebody has an intention to incite violence, and that's why they're at that protest, they can ask them to remove this. But is it, in your view, part of your right to peacefully protest that if you want to wear a face covering, and Jim O'Callaghan used the example himself, you mightn't want your employer to know that you're at a particular protest. That's your only reason for wearing your face covering, and you should be allowed to do so.
Yeah, but you're not. Then this is about giving discretion to a Garda,
yeah,
to basically be able to say, I believe that this person's intention is not to peacefully protest, and therefore I want to be able to identify who this person is. I'd say there's limited enough circumstances now where people need to go to a protest wearing a balaclava or having the hoodie up over their head and the mask on. We have seen instances, unfortunately, over the last couple of years where there have been direct attempts by people to hide their identity, because they were not engaging in peaceful protest. So we can't throw our hands up in the air and go, oh, isn't it terrible altogether that there was a riot or there was an altercation or there was some sort of disturbance, and then not give the Gardaí the powers to actually police these things. Because this is not in isolation. This goes with the body cameras. It goes with the ability to train the Gardaí to police such, mm-hmm, such events. So it's just one part of that jigsaw to learn the lessons of what we have seen happening in recent times.
Sinead, are you concerned about any element of this?
I can see why the ICCL Civil Liberties Group are concerned about it, because you hear a ban on masks at protests and you think, oh, that's like one step towards, mm-hmm, stopping freedom of expression and protests. But it's less than that. It's not a blanket ban. And also it is about discretion. Where I would be concerned, and the GRA have talked about this before, is if some of these instruments come in and proper training isn't given to Gardaí and they feel like they don't actually know which way they're meant to go when asking someone, you know, can you take off your mask? If it's overused, if it's used incorrectly, if it's used at protests in those very rare occasions that people might be wearing masks for other reasons. So that's where the concern is. But along with proper training and a proper use of the discretion of this, a lot of it's not about protest. A lot of these people are not going to protest something. They're going, like the people that the guards are talking about and Jim O'Callaghan talking about, they're not actually protesters. They're rioters or causing trouble in some other way.
Mm-hmm. But some people, and Joanna, I'll bring you in on this, might want to protest outside the embassy of a country, for example, where human rights are being violated. Should they not be allowed and permitted to conceal their identity without fear of being asked to remove that covering?
Yeah, I think the devil will be in the detail of this, and we'll need to see the full detail of the legislation that the minister is proposing. It's my understanding that the new laws would only apply where a person has breached a certain section of the Public Order Act and essentially failed to comply with the direction of a member of Garda Síochána Síochána. But laws must get the balance right, and human rights and civil liberties and all of this has to come into this as well. And the policing authority themselves have pointed out that new laws must include like categorically clear guidelines for both the Garda members and for the public as to what the parameters are in which the removal of a mask might be compelled. And until we have clarity, we're in very early days of this conversation, until we have clarity around these laws and what they will entail, it's going to be very hard to see how this will move forward without major resistance. And the key parts of this, and you've seen it yourselves there in the policing authorities review, public order policing, is that the major issue to all of this is a lack of sufficient Garda numbers to be able to deploy to incidents. And that's a key issue in public order policing. And that needs to be where government's focus is making progress and sorting out that recruitment and retention. And indeed, has been mentioned by Sinead and Fiona, is to increase the training capacity from Garda Síochána, because you can't implement something like this without the Gardaí being fully trained. And at the moment, they haven't got confidence that they
are. And I think the other reason for that is people have seen Gardaí take different approaches to different types of protests, which I think the guards can explain, but they don't explain it. So I think that's where some of the mistrust of an instrument like this.
But when you take this, you know, this face covering legislation, along with facial recognition technology, the body cams that the Gardaí are wearing, and Jim O'Callaghan said as well that he wants to roll that out across the country, people might be worried that we're moving into a space where a lot of people are not comfortable, Seamus.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think there will be very strong public support for these measures. I think the approach in terms of face covering is a very balanced approach. It is about striking the right balance, and it is about instilling some discretion to our members of An Garda Síochána, and we shouldn't be afraid to do that. The vast majority of our guards perform their duties absolutely professionally, and I think it's important that we give them that discretion. You know, they will complain that a lot of their discretion has been removed in recent years. Mm-hmm. So I think it's important that we trust our guards. This is about dealing with those who have ill intent, who are determined to cause intimidation, criminal damage and criminal activity and so on. And there's nothing annoys the public more than when you see scenes like the riots that took place in this country in recent times. You see people going around with their face covered in front of cameras, damaging property, causing havoc, and yet the guards weren't able to tell them to remove their coverings. I mean, that's not acceptable. That has to change, and I think that's what the minister is doing.
Sinead, before we come to the end, I just wanted to ask you, as a former Camogie player, what you made of where we ended up with the Scorts controversy during the week, the Camogie Association now having this meeting on the 24th. The rule may change, but that's not guaranteed. It has to come down to a vote.
It may change. I reckon the delegates probably should have learned their lesson from the last time, that they do have to vote with the players' intentions in mind and their players' wishes in mind, that there will be some level of choice. I listened actually to Tess Howard, who's a great British hockey player, and they had this argument a few years ago. And she said that her team now, the national team, line out 8 of them in Scorts and 8 of them in Shorts. So it is all about choice. For me, the bigger thing, I talked about this with Rena Buckley, one of the best Camogie players ever on this island, on our podcast during the week, and both of us were frustrated that we've got so much airtime out of this. Like, it is really important, and fair play to all of the women and all of the players who have protested and got something that's really important to them, and I think we will see Shorts in the next year in Camogie. But there are bigger things. Like, I got a text from one of the teenagers in our club through her dad this morning, saying there's bigger issues with the association: funding, pitches, facilities. So for every single politician who has talked about Shorts or worn Shorts into the Dáil this week, I hope they're asking everybody in their areas what's happening with integration, what's happening with their club integration. Are they a one club? Do the girls who are playing have the same access to pitches? Are they at the best times? Have the senior girls or the top adult team, have they played on the main pitch, or do the men get the main pitch when the women don't? These are the issues. Mm-hmm. Like, is Charlotte Burns doing enough? Are we getting briefed against the cost of integration rather than what's going to do well out of integration? Kevin O'Donovan, the CEO of Cork, has said they can go into a room and decide tomorrow. Okay. We are one organisation. So
all
that's
right.
What I'd prefer them to be talking
all
about.
Right, we've got to leave it there. Thank you all very much. We'll take a quick break.
Text
51551. Today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.